All right. Good afternoon and welcome to the customizing Windows PE session. I'm very excited to be in Australia for the first time. Been to Tech before, but never down here, so very excited about that. If you see me limping a bit, it's because I made a challenge a bit when I go down to Tech, and that was every day in the morning at 6:30, starting Monday, so three times already, running 4 miles down the beach, back and forth. So now my legs are starting to get really sore and painful, so that's why I'm limping a bit. But only 2 days left, and then this Tech will be over for the running part. This is a session about basically two things. One, to understand Windows PE so we can work around its limitations and understand or be better and more efficient with terms of troubleshooting. So quickly navigate and find issues and resolve them. And the second part is, of course, extending it, customizing it, adding more features, making our deployments more dynamic to fit to our environment and not static deployments like we maybe had in, 10 years ago. So my usual disclaimer here, this is a level 300 session. This is a technical session. I expect you guys to know a thing or two already about WinPE and are basically here to want to learn more. So short and story, if you don't like command prompts, command line utilities, scripts, log files, drivers, you probably will not like this session because this session is about that. And if you accidentally discover right now that you ended up in the wrong room, I would certainly not be offended if you need to go out and pick another session. I hope you won't, but I will not be offended if you do. So my name is Johan. I've been an IT guy since I was about 10, doing deployment now for the last 21 years or so. I used to run the old deployvista.com blog site, but that name sort of faded away, so I created a new domain. It's now Deployment Research, where I write about all my findings, and this is also where you can find most of the research for this session as well. I'm also a Microsoft MVP in setup and deployment as well. So if I can kill this one. I love questions. I'm monitoring on this laptop the Twitter feed, and I can see three comments already being added into this session, and I will try to answer any question that pop up in here. We don't have time for an infinite number, but if you have a question, go ahead and ask it. If I don't have time to answer it during the session, I will do it afterwards. And really good questions might just get rewarded with a book. So the obvious swag. All right. As you can hear from my accent, I don't live in Australia. I'm from Sweden, Europe, and I took the way through New York, through Austin, Texas, to LA to get here. So that's like a 38-hour flight. Luckily, I didn't do that in one day, though. So I've been on the road for a while. I love doing that. In my work, I work as a consultant. I basically travel around this blue planet of ours, helping customers implement different deployment solutions. And I'm basically here to talk about these notes from the field, share this experience with you here today. So the four bullets on the agenda is, again, divided into two major parts. The first one is understanding WinPE. The second, all right, what can we do to actually extend it? Because when we start to do Windows 7 deployment projects, how many in here are still deploying XP? A few hands, all right. I would assume you are either going right now or already starting the project of actually going from XP on top of Windows 7, because that's a typical trend that I see all around the globe right now. But with Windows 7, things are changing. In the XP days, it was not very uncommon that a company had like 10 or 15 images, ghost images with an XP on, not very hardware independent, and very static. We want to try to move away from that, to be more flexible when we deploy Windows. So for example, I can have a single global image, but if I deploy it in France, because of that, I will add the French language pack. Because it belongs to the accounting department, I will feed it with a list of 15 applications. Things I cannot easily do if I have them all inside the image. So we try to move away everything outside of the image and rather focus on being as dynamic as we possibly can. And also sometimes your manager comes and they buy a new hardware in and you start the deployment of that hardware, it's a new brand new laptop, and the first thing you'll see is, all right, could not connect to the network. All right, driver missing. So you go to the vendor site, we even ask the vendor, what driver should I be using? This driver. All right, you add the driver, you try again, and it still fails. So how many have seen that? A few of you. Everybody, actually. So being able to quickly find out why that driver did not load is where we're going to spend some time on in this session as well. So my demo environment, my manager was kind enough to give me a pretty nice laptop. This is a Core i7 machine. It has 8 CPUs, logical, 2 dual solid-state drives, 256, and a lot of RAM in it. So it will allow me to run about 10 VMs on a single laptop on an airplane for about 15 minutes before the battery dies. But anyway, it allows me to quickly simulate an entire environment and do tests and elaborations without actually going into production just because I want to test something. So it's quite valuable. But we have an Active Directory running. I will use a few different member servers, and I also use the Config Manager server when I demonstrate the Config Manager parts of it. So how many of you in here are using MDT 2010 Light Touch today? A few of you. How many are using Config Manager? The rest of you, all right. Now, about one-third using Config Manager here. So Windows PE is being used in about every single deployment solution there is today. And for the people in the back, as you can see, you're standing around the walls, there are still open seats. So if you want to take it, grab a seat. Or we just do this. Can you just compress a little bit, you know, this way, making room for more people? Beautiful. Thank you, guys. It's healthy to do some exercise after lunch, you know, fed your stomach and, yeah. All right. So, as I said, with Windows 7, things are changing. Everything now is image-based. So Windows PE is being used to drive the deployment, of course. But Windows 7 images can be deployed in different ways. For example, we can deploy them using SetupExe. But if we do that, we need to make sure that SetupExe starts in the right architecture of the boot image. So if I want to run a 32-bit setup, well, I need to be in a 32-bit WinPE. And if I want to start a 64-bit setup, I need to be in a 64-bit WinPE. Of course, I can switch and do cross-platform deployment here. I can use ImageX, for example, to start the 32-bit boot image and actually just apply a 64-bit image if I want to. I can kick off the 32-bit setup and tell it to go ahead and look for a 64-bit image for me. So it's still possible to do things like that, but for the most part, at least now, you're using 2 boot images if you're using light touch deployments, and 1 boot image, the 32-bit one, if you're using Config Manager deployments, because they are using an ImageX apply-like component when they deploy images. The setup itself, once we get the bits going, is automated through an unattended XML file. Normally, we don't edit that file much, because the deployment solutions, they normally have a good template. So when I start the deployment of this laptop, for example, what normally happens, and doesn't matter if it's Microsoft or it's third party, the process is often like 3 things. There is one step that gathers information about the deployment. What computer name you're supposed to have, what applications you're supposed to add, what OU that machine is going into, what domain to join, things like that are being gathered first. Then an unattended template is being copied locally to the C drive, and a script or an exe file are injecting the changes that the first process gathered around from different systems and different solutions. And then the setup is kicked off using the now updated local unattended XML file. This is how we can have it dynamic. So rather than doing changes inside an unattended XML file, we have something else that injects changes to it during the deployment. Then in Windows 7, we also have at least the nicer additions. We have a new deployment way, and that's called boot from BHD. How many of you have actually played with it? Like four hands. What it basically means is that you take your Windows 7 image, you create an empty VHD file container using either disk part or disk manager, and you just dump that image into that container. So now you have a single file, which is a VHD file. I can now take a blank machine, boot up Windows PE on it, format the drive, copy that single file only over to that drive, change the loader, and I can boot on that file. If I do a directory listing on my C drive, I see one file only, but I can still deploy or boot Windows from it. This is available in Enterprise, Ultimate, and of course the service queues as well. So this takes lab and test to a whole new level, because I can now have multiple VHD files side by side on a single volume, and I can simply select which one to boot from. And I can even spawn child processes, child VHDs from a parent VHD if I want to. So this is exciting new technology in Windows 7 setup that we can leverage in addition to the normal ways of deploying things. All right. So the latest version of WinPE is 3.1. Currently, I don't recommend you to use it yet, because the current deployment solutions, they sort of works best with version 3.0. However, there are functions in 3.1 that are sort of needed. Not many people are doing 802.1x, you know, policy-based or secured networks. But quite a few of you will run into these new type of hard drives, advanced format hard drives. They need to be aligned correctly when we deploy Windows to them, and that was a fix they added in 3.1. That fix is available as a hotfix as well for 3.0. And that hotfix actually needs to go into Windows as well, even if you are running Service Pack 1, which was supposed to have that hotfix in it. But they found a few issues, corrected them, and there is a hotfix now available. So you add that hotfix to WinPE, and you add it to Windows, and then you will be good. For those of you still deploying XP, sorry, not supported with these new hard drives. Can you make it work? Sure. You need to make sure to download a third-party disk alignment tool from Paragon. Run that after you deploy your XP image. And also, of course, make sure to never, ever extend the OEM partition as part of your sysprep in file, because that will break the partitioning for you. But if you buy a new laptop today from Lenovo, HP, Dell, whatever, they will come with these drives. So you need to be very sure that you have that hotfix in them. All right. The KB article number, by the way, is 98, 20, and 18. That's a hotfix required. And it was updated last time in, I think it was April. Version 3, anyway. So 98, 20, 18. We still have some features around in WinPE, which is called a scratch space. What's the scratch space used for? What's the point? Exactly, storing for temporary files, yeah. Depending on your deployment solution, for example, if you're using LightTouch to deploy Windows 7, it's actually using the scratch space while it's injecting drivers into the driver store, or extracting drivers and then inject them. And if you're unlucky, for example, how big is the NVIDIA video card driver? The core driver is about 80 megs. And you do not need to go to like a university in Australia to figure out it's difficult to take an 80 meg driver and try to fit it in a 32 meg buffer. It sort of breaks. So often you need to increase the scratch base, and I will show you how to do that later on, but that's a common issue we'll run into. For those of you who are running Config Manager, do you need to worry? Not really. What they did, they actually just repointed the temp variable to the C drive. And if you don't have enough space on the C drive to extract drivers, well, you have a problem already, right? So not a problem there. You still might need to change the scratch space, because when we start to add our own logging scripts, customized components and such, they often need temporary files as well. So in Config Manager, we might have to do this, but it's not as likely as if we're using light touch components. This is also why it's in light touch, it's in the UI to change things, while in Config Manager, it's command line to change things. So let me start a normal Windows 7 setup for you. So I will switch over to my demo environment. I will find me a client. I'll jump to a clean snapshot. And I will mount an ISO. Think this one will do. And now I'm booting on that ISO. This is the normal Windows 7 setup experience. If you crank open a Windows 7 DVD, you will find a sources folder, and inside that folder, you will find two files that are WIM files. Boot.wim, that is Windows PE. Install.wim, that is a sys-prepped image of Windows 7 with one or more indexes, but it's ready for being deployed. So with Windows 7, unlike XP, you actually can take the image that you get from Microsoft directly and deploy it. It's deployment ready. All right, so now the setup is started. Windows PE is running now. And at any given point, setup is running. You can actually press Shift F10 and get a command prompt. This has been available since NT4. NT4.0, that is 15 years ago. But for example here, I can go into the Windows folder, and I can start to look into what log files that has been created for me. So you can see there is a setup act log file. And let me just try to make use of Summit here. So that you can see it. So that's a log file. This log file is the setup log file. It will actually move around to about 7 different locations during a deployment. So if I start a setup here, I click Next, I say Install Now, it's actually kicking off Setup Exe. So now if I flip back, the log file is now a little bit bigger. If I review the same log file. So now I can see actually it did launch Setup Exe. With a bunch of very undocumented switches. But it did. It started setup. So now, I can go ahead and actually accept the license agreement. Next, custom, next, and it will eventually kick off setup. It will copy the setup files, about 312 megs or so, and then it will start expanding the image to the drive. This is how setup works. So in a few seconds, you can see it's now actually expanding Windows files. So if I go back to my command prompt, go to my C drive, and do a directory listing, and dash A just to make sure I will see all hidden files. Nothing. Yet it's expanding. soon to be 1% here. Where is the stuff? It's currently deployment. Where is my content? Scratch space? No. Second partition, which one? Let us take a look. Let us start this part. And wait. This is a Microsoft moment. Patience. So I will list the volumes now. Which volume is what? C colon is the BitLocker partition, where E colon right now is our Windows partition. All right? So if I go back to my E drive and do a directory listing, all right, this is where I have my stuff. But remember, in Windows PE, the drive letters that you see, they are only temporary. They will be changed when it reboots and starts the mini setup. But this is how you actually can see. Now I can go in and follow the second log file being created in the obvious Panther folder, which is the name of the logging engine in Windows 7. And now I can review the same log file again, or the now updated log file. And if I search, for example, memory, I can see that, all right, this system apparently has enough memory because a gig is more than 376, which is the memory that setup actually requires. Windows P requires 512, but setup doesn't. So this is how we can see and follow Windows 7 setup. So I will come back to this for a while. So after a while, that is. The current deployment solution that Microsoft provides is these two. There will be new versions available this fall in November and December-ish time frame. I actually have on the second row here, I had the lead developer for MDT, Mr. Niehaus, sitting and joining. I thought he was going to be on the heckler's row, which is this row. It was full. I'm sorry about that. All right, so shorthand story. If you have Config Manager, you normally still use MDT components together with it to extend Config Manager with more deployment features. If you don't have Config Manager, you normally stick with the light touch parts. And the light touch and zero touch names that you hear has nothing to do with the type of deployment you do. Any solution, either the free one, which is the top one, or the more expensive one, which is the bottom one, they can be as automated as you want them to be. If you want them to go through 100% fully automated, you can do that. If you want them to stop and ask you questions, what computer name, what applications, what settings, they can do that too. It's up to you to decide this. So I still think it's a bit unfortunate about the naming because they are, deployment-wise, equally good deployment solutions. I would never ever on this planet buy Config Manager for the sole purpose of only doing OS deployment. That I would consider being wasting a little bit too much money to get just OSD. The Config Manager platform is a systems management platform that can do a lot of things. Software updates, inventory, hardware software inventory, reporting, virtual applications, decide configuration management, a massive platform. And if you buy that platform, for all those reasons, of course you should be using it for OSD as well. But if you're only looking for OSD, I would bet my money on LightTouch because it's free and it will give you roughly the same experience and the same features. All right. So how does these solutions generate WinPE images? Well, let's go back here. I start with LightTouch. So I'm on MDT01 member server right now. Most administration is done through the management console, deployment workbench. if you are really hardcore, you can do everything in PowerShell as well, because everything that we do in the UI actually executes as a PowerShell command in the background. But this is where we build deployment solution based on free tools. So we basically just start importing OSs, servers, clients, whatever. And when we go to our deployment share, which is just a container for everything, this is where we have the Windows PE settings, our boot image settings. And as you can see down here, let me just start zooming up here. This is where you set the scratch base. You just go in here, configure it, update the share, and you're good. I was talking about new hardware before. What do you do in LightTouch if you get new hardware that you need to support? Well, you find a driver, you add it to the workbench. I normally create a Windows PE folder for my drivers. And then you update the share again so that that driver is being injected into the boot image. So there is no need to do all these command line utility tweaks unless we're doing troubleshooting, which is for later. But this is how MDT does it. So basically providing you a UI to do changes into the boot images. Config Manager is similar. If I go to a Config Manager server and open up the console here, this is the Config Manager console. We have boot images here. I can right-click a boot image. I can go properties. And I can wait. There is a new console coming out in 2012. There is a reason for that. The old one is not the fastest console on the planet. But anyway, I can do changes here in my Windows PE image. So I can, for example, here, I can add and add and remove drivers directly if I want to. So again, yes, providing a UI to do things that other would require us to go in and do command line stuff in here. Okay. So how would I go about and set the scratch base in Config Manager if I'm running my own scripts and I need that extra space for my temporary files? How would I do that? Well, I need to find my boot image. All right, properties on it, the data source, and there's the path to it. So if I go to packages, I can go to boot, and there is my boot image here. This is my 64-bit boot image. All right, two files. Which one to change? Any ideas? First one? No. The little one. Little by name and little by size. Why? This is the template. Every time you update it, it will create a new top one. So if you do a change in the long one by name and by size, the change will last a while until someone updates the DP and then your changes are gone. So what you would have to do is to fire up a deployment tools command prompt. You will need to learn how to mount images. So currently I have an empty folder, let me see, on my D drive. It's currently empty. So I will go to my packages folder where I have my boot images. Here we go. I will use ImageX. I can also use Dism to mount it. The reason I prefer ImageX is because I don't have to type as much. The same command in Dism is like that long, and there is no auto-completion either. So I will go mount read write. I will select a small image, index one, and I will specify to mount it to this folder I showed you before. So, all right, mounting this one. Blah, 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 blah. Apparently, it's already mounted into some folder. Try again. Beautiful with live demo. F7, by the way, brings you up the history of all the commands. Has been available since DOS 3. with DOS key loaded. So I'll try to mount it again. It's now mounting one WIM file. So if I now do a directory listing on my mount folder, I now have stuff in it. So I open the WIM file for edit. Now I can use thism to go image colon and the path to the image. And I can, for example, ask it, please get me the current scratch space size here. So get dash scratch space. And you can see it's currently, all right, 32 megs here. All right. But I can also do a set scratch space. And value in megs, maximum is 512. So now I'm setting the scratch space. So now you can see that the new scratch space is now 128. And now, of course, before committing changes, someone who wrote the new filter driver made it very sensible to open file handles. So just remember closing every Explorer window before you commit changes to it, and you will be good. After the cleanup failed for you about 10 times, you start to remember things like that. So I will do an image X. I normally would do an unmount, and I would do a commit. This is also the difference by using ImageX and DISM. ImageX doesn't warn you if you are discarding the changes. DISM does. So, all right. So I will skip commit for now. I don't need the changes. And I will specify the folder, and I'm done. So this is how I set the scratch space for config manager boot images. All right. So, how can we make and create our own boot images? Troubleshooting, for testing, for creating our own extensions and solutions on top of things. Well, with Windows Ike, who is having a sort of a flexible versioning number? The last 12 months or so, the same binaries, exact same binaries, on Microsoft Download has gone from version 1 to version 2 to currently version 3. But it is Ike version 2. So look for the name Windows Ike for Windows 7, and you will be good. No matter what version number it sticks in the end to it. So, but currently, it's version 1. The update will go from version 3.1. So, all right. So, let me show you some of the changes that we can do using these tools. So I will do a few things. I will start by creating myself a custom image that I want to have. So I will create a 64-bit boot image. I will start the deployment tools command prompt. The only difference between this command prompt and a normal command prompt is it actually set the path where it has its utilities, so it can find them. So I will run copy PE, the architecture, and a folder where I want my Gold Coast x64 image. So copy PE, the architecture, and the folder. That's it. All right, now I have iBoot image. In here, you'll see a WIM file, wimpe.wim. That is the boot image. All right. It can't be in that folder if I want to do in bootable media. This WIM file I can add to my Pixel server so I can F12 and start it that way. If I want to create a bootable ISO to mount in a VM, I'd actually need to move this folder or file into the ISO sources folder and name it boot.wim. And then, after moving that file in that folder, I can use this utility to create an ISO of it. So I can make it bootable by specifying B and El Torito file system boot record, etfsboot.com. It's a 2 or 4K binary that makes it bootable. And El Torito, by the way, is the restaurant in Irvine, California, where the people writing the standard used to go for lunch. Very important to know that. Dash N for long file name support. The ISO, the folder I want to create an ISO of, and a Gold Coast ISO name. You can use this utility to create ISOs of everything. That doesn't have to be bootable. So I'm now compiling an ISO. Good. I will go to my client, make sure I have a clean snapshot. I was deploying Windows to it. And I will mount the ISO I created and boot on it. You can see it's defaulting to 8x600. It has starts WP init, which starts the network in WinPE. So now if I do an IP config, I should have a network address. If I try to start create a VB script, I will do a very advanced VB script here. Message box, OK. Not very complicated. And I try to run it. I can't. Because by default, the scripting component is not added to the boot image. This is something I need to enable. This is something that the MDT and Config Manager will do for me. But when I create my own one, I will have to do that. So we save that for later. If I map my drive letter back to my server, let me just do this. Let me kill one of the Sumit guys on the server. Right, back to my client. I will connect back to my server. Doing a normal net use, whatever. I will go to the location where I have Sumit. And I will try to run it. Bam! It failed. Why did it fail? Sorry? Oh, close. I'll give you half right for that. Sir, this is yours. The correct answer is, this is a 64-bit WinP. Sumit is a 32-bit application. You cannot run 32-bit apps in a 64-bit WinP, period. You can run 32-bit apps in 64-bit Windows, but not in WinP. It's missing the 64-bit, the SysWav164 subsystem. The 32-bit subsystem is missing from WinP. However, it turns out that Mark Brasonovich, who is the author, and Bryce Coxwell behind these utilities, they were a bit tricky. So if I start that utility on a 64-bit host capable of running 32-bit, unlike WinPE, look here. It's actually extracting from a resource component in the .exe, a 64-bit version from within that file. So if you look at the size of it, you can see it's about half the size. So the 32-bit binary actually has two .exes in it. So what we can do, well, snatch it. Copy. Put it somewhere else. Beautiful. Go back to my boot image. Sumit is now in WinP. I can do Sumit in there. There is another utility which is extremely useful for troubleshooting deployments called Trace. Trace 32. Same story here. Microsoft internally, they have a 64-bit version. Us mere mortals, we don't get it. We get the 32-bit one. But what they did also now in the new Config Manager 2012 beta that you can download, they embedded it as well. They just don't extract it into the same folder. They extract it into the temp folder. So just start a 32-bit, find a file, and now you have a trace that actually works in 64-bit WinP as well. Beautiful. All right. That was a very basic boot image. Let us create a more customized one. Let's go ahead and do a 32-bit one. So I will kill this one off. Then I will create a copy PE, x86 this time, and I will do a demo Gold Coast x86 folder. Done. I will move the WinP file into the ISO sources, just like before, boot.wim. But before creating the ISO, I'm going to open it and I will do some changes to it. So I will use ImageX. I will mount it. ISO sources boot.wim. Index 1, and a folder. I'm just going to verify it's empty here. Beautiful, all right. So I'm mounting the ISO, WIM file. So, adding drivers. What if I buy that new hardware, it couldn't find a network, I need to add it. And I don't run LightTouch, I don't run Config Manager, I want to do this on this image only. Maybe for troubleshooting. All right. I just happen to have in my demo folder, I have a driver subfolder with a driver in it that is required in WinP for certain virtual platforms. Right? Or I have a 64-bit one where I'm trying to deploy an HP machine and I need their controller, things like that. But for now, I'm going to do the Adaptec, which is not included in WinP by default, at least not this version. So I will use DISM and specify the folder where I mounted my image, and I will go add driver. So I can either say one driver, or I can point it to folder and do a recursive injection of everything it finds in it. So for now, but I will do driver and I will simply point it to a path. And as long as you do this, add a quote after every command, you can actually now do character completion to make sure and to avoid, you know, spelling errors. Just pressing tab multiple times. But that quote is needed there. So now I can use this to actually add a driver into my image. All right, driver installed successfully. I can also add components. I was trying to launch a VB script before. The VB script support was missing. I can add that. So I can do DISM, the image path again. And instead of doing add driver, I will do add package. And I will do a package path, colon, quote, and I will browse to where Windows Ike is storing their packages. And I would add the scripting package to it. There's a bunch of cab files in that folder, each adding support for something. But there is a scripting cab in there. So I'm now adding scripting support to my boot image. It's not enough just adding the core component. You also need to actually add the language portion of it. So in here, you will also find a language folder with the equivalent language part of the package. So I will add that as well. Same command. When you start a light touch deployment, the screen resolution is not 8x600. It's 1024x768. How do they do that? Beautiful. Ah, that is a book. That is a book. I was hesitant at first, but here you go, sir. It's a light touch book, so it's sort of fitting. They use a template. Like this. A normal answer file. If you put this file in the root of the boot image, when wp-init starts, it will read this file. And if you configure it to set the screen resolution to 1024, it will, rather than the default 8x600. So I will just copy this file into the mount folder in the root here, then. If I need some additional stuff, I can simply copy it. And put it in the mount folder, just adding components to it. So I can also do registry injections in the offline registry in WinPE. So for example, if I want my command prompt to look like this, nice greenish thing, I can actually create a registry file that will simply set those registry values. So what I can do is I can do a regload, load the offline hive, specifying a temp folder or temp node, and then I specify the offline registry. Mount, Windows, System32, config, default. So now I'm loading the WinPE registry into my running registry on my host right now. And then, if I go back to my demo folder, I can do a regedit/s to simply import that registry file. Or I can double-click it. It will be the same thing. So now the changes are in there, and I can do reg unload and specify the same key again, hopefully typed correctly. So now I'm adding offline registry stuff into my boot image. Right. Done with changes for now. So I will close all Explorer windows, and I will make sure to, this time, when unmounting, actually commit changes into this folder, or from this folder. All right. Whoops. And now I can create a new bootable image. Let's do that. Whoops. Yeah, well, we try. So now I have an ISO with the changes I did, adding drivers, adding packages, adding registry stuff, adding files and folders to it. So now if I go to a VM and start it on that boot image, Gold Coast, here we go. So let's see what happens. There are a few questions in the Twitter field already, so let me pick a few of them. some of us at the back of the room are using a unnamed third-party deployment solution, beginning with an A. They also use WinP. Works the same way. Altiris has been using Windows P since 6.9. Can use other boot images as well, but certainly can use Windows P. And you will actually find that most companies developing deployment solutions these days, they are actually using Windows P because that's the supported way of deploying Windows. All right. What is the best custom HDA? I will show you the best custom HDA later, ever. Now I'll show you a sample. How do you install the driver into a WIM when the driver is an XE with X amount of tick boxes? Well, Windows PE and offline servicing adding drivers will not accept an executable file. Simply won't. Windows may, but Windows PE really doesn't. If you do offline servicing, it expects an INF file. So you need to either install that .exe or unpack it. My favorite tools are WinRAR, 7-Zip, or Universal Extractor, because they are often capable of locating the drivers from within that .exe, and then you can add it into the boot image. All right. So you can see Windows P booted. It's now green instead of black. You can see the screen resolution is no longer 8x600. It's now 1024. And hopefully, the C script engine is now there because I've added, you know, the C script, the scripting component. So let me go back to server share again and kick off a setup. Here we go. Oh, Windows 7. My super secret password. All right. So I will go into the... that's a new command. I will go into a folder where I have an operating system copy. The DVD, actually. Sources. CD sources. And I will run setup. How many of you think this will work? Two people. Thank you. It didn't. Why didn't it do it? Exciting. I'm on a 32-bit WinP now, trying to execute a 64-bit setup. I can't do that. So what I need to do is I need to go back, navigate into my 32-bit file, and now I can launch setup. But I can actually do a dash install from colon and specify a 64-bit WIM. So now I'm deploying 64-bit OSs from a 32-bit boot image. And MDT 2012 are actually now adding in cross-platform deployment into it. So when is your session, Michael? Thursday, Friday? Friday? There is a session on Friday morning, was it? Last slot, like noonish? on Friday. There is a What's New in MVT 2012. Go see it. It's a good session. But this is how I can sort of trick it to do something else for me. All right, what can we do more? This was just basic plumbing into WinP, adding stuff that is needed. Well, if we would like to, there is, again, a list of components we can add built in. We can author, even though it's not very documented, our own plugins to WinP and have them being injected. We can add our own custom front ends to answer that question if you want to. HDA works beautiful in WinP. You can craft your own C++ code in WinP if you want to. Don't do that, but you can to execute components in it. You cannot, well, officially yet, run .NET Framework applications in WinP because WinP doesn't support that yet. I hope they will some point, but currently they don't. We can even use web services directly from WinP. We can talk to databases directly from WinP. So when we start the deployment of this laptop, I can have this laptop go on to a central site saying, hey, I'm this laptop with this MAC address. What settings should I have? What computer name should I have? What applications should I have? And those settings will be retrieved back to the client and be used in the deployment. We can do that again, fully automated, or we can actually prompt for it. So let's take a look at that. Back in 2005, that was before MDT, by the way. I was creating a deployment solution based on Windows PE 1.2 and then later 1.4 and 5, no, 1.5 and 6, that required me to connect to Active Directory to do things. And you can't do that from WinP officially. So what I wrote back then was a plugin that enabled WinP to do Active Directory lookups. And I have continued to develop that plugin for backward compatibility with stuff from that time frame. Don't do this anymore. If you want to, from WinP, connect to Active Directory, you should be using a web service. Because Windows PE will understand and talk to web services natively as long as you provide the right scripts to do that. So rather than having code now running on the client side, we can actually store it as a web application somewhere. And then WinP simply connects to that. So I will show you that in a minute. But I have another plugin. Actually written by someone else in the room here. It's a driver file. You can actually create INF files that will install applications, copy files and register keys over to WinP as well. So if I go back and open my WIM file again, let me see, I need to be in the right folder. Here we go. I can now inject the component the exact way as I did with the driver. So I can run this and I can say image colon specify the driver dum-dum-dum-dum. Here we go. So So I'm adding a component to it. So I already have an ISO with that mounted. So let me start that for you. Save some time. Question in the Twitter feed, how can do a sleep within an HDA without pinging localhost? Well, sleep doesn't really work in HDA, as you probably know. You can have a loop in it. Scripting Guys has a few examples on how to create loops inside an HDA. Often you do it by calling an external script that will do something, loop, and then return it back, but it's certainly possible. Sorry? If I can. You can use a timer event as well, absolutely. You can do that. So now you can see I actually have background info running in WinP. All right. Looks like this. Let me start another boot image here. In this boot image, I actually added an HDA that will combine everything that we have been talking about. Here we go. In this case, I stole the wizard from LightTouch, MDT LightTouch, put it on a config manager boot image, created a database where I have my settings, creating a few web services that will look up other settings. And then I have this single HDA reach out to all these different resources to present me with information when I do my deployment. So this is a standard config manager boot image. I'm using the pre-start hook to execute a VB script that will start the HDA. Looks like this. So rather than having the default LightTouch wizard, when you're entering something, click next, something else, click next, I decided, no, I want them on the same page. So as you can see here, this information, these two are retrieved using a web service that contacts a database, returns the value to me, and populates this box. The role selection is also from the database. But instead of populating a text field, I'm populating a drop-down box. This field is querying Active Directory. So I have a web service that queries Active Directory for OUs beneath a certain point in AD and returns the list to me in real time. And in this case, I'm actually pulling available sequences in Config Manager this time to allow me to do something for deployment. And as you can see down here, I have just added for display some additional information about the machine. This front end, since it's an HDA, it's basically open source, right? It's in a text file. The web services are compiled code, but on CodePlex, I have put up all the source code required to build frontends like this. So for example, if I jump over to my dev machine, which is also my config manager server machine, don't do that. I'm running Visual Studio, and here you'll see the different functions that makes up those web services or those methods. And when you start to look into the code, for example, the code that returns the computer name or the code that returns the role list, it's often about 20 lines of code per method. So I'm basically doing a select from the database and I'm generating an XML document and I put the record set in it. The beauty of a web service is that I can run it on the server side. to verify I'm getting the correct information. All right, apparently listing a few roles here as an XML file. My HDA is consuming that. So the only thing that you need to do on the server side is to fire up IIS Manager. And wait. A long time. It's thinking. So I just added a web application here. Right-clicked, add application. This is how you add a web service. If you don't want to write your own web services, go to CodePlex, search for MDT, search for frontend, and you will find rich examples of ready-made web services that you can steal from and start working with, unless you want to write them your own. I have in the slide deck, there is a resource slide later on. You can download these slides from ComNet. I have put the links to the resources that I've been using throughout the demos here, by the way. So what to do when things go wrong? Well, what if I have my client? What if it could not connect here? What if it could not find that network card driver? What can you do? Well, first, get a command prompt. Let me just go to a boot image where I have a command prompt. Cool. There is a question in the Twitter feed about the, can we take a look at the INF format? And the author actually responded and pointed to a link there, so you should be able to find it. Thank you, Michael. Often when dealing with things like this, it's start basic. Start by verifying, you know, do an IP config, do I have an IP address? If I don't, it will never work. If it's blank, I'm missing a driver. Try to ping whatever server you are trying to access, either by name or by FQDN name. Start disk part. Verify that you actually can see the disk on the machine. Do a list disk. If it returns nothing, you will never ever deploy something to that machine. But what can you do if that network card driver fails? Well, it turns out to be that in the System32 folder, there is actually a WPInit log file, where you actually can see what it was doing, what hardware it found, and what driver that actually eventually was used to start that network card. If you go to the Windows In folder, you also have the setup-api.dev.log file, which is all the devices, where you can see the ranking process and things like that, normally for Windows, but also for WinP. That can also help you find issues. But most of the times, you'll have to go to the client, because the log files are on that client. What if I don't want to do that? Wouldn't it be nice to be able to connect to my boot image from my server? Enabling remote connection. can now go to my server. Let me just minimize this window for a while. I need this information. I will start a remote connection viewer on my server. You can see there is a ticket number, an IP address, and a port. But I'm interested now in the ticket number. So let me see if I can move this around a bit. And the IP address was, and the port was, right. Now I have my boot image available on my server. So I can do things remotely. This is a component from Dart, part of MDOP, Dart 7. So if you have software assurance and you have MDOP, you get these components. And Mr. Niehaus and his team, they actually took that step further, and they will provide solutions for this in the next releases. So if you want to see how that looks, Friday, last slot, right? To see things like that. It's still in the beta, isn't it? You haven't removed it, right? Good stuff. But it's really valuable being able to connect to a client rather than... And I don't need to disable the firewall. There actually is a component in here that opens that port specifically, that firewall. And if you look in the root here, it actually creates an XML file. This XML file holds the information I typed in the remote connection viewer. So if you want, you can actually parse this file, put something on the server that allow you to remotely connect to the right client. Pretty cool stuff. If you need detailed information on how to do that, my blog is in the first link here, where you'll find the step-by-step to add remote connections. And I also added Niehaus blog, Deployment Guys blog, and Michael Nystrom's blog, the deploymentbunny.com blog site. So by that, I would like to remind you to fill in the evaluation, the evals, and as always, be honest but gentle. And thank you for taking your time. Thanks, you guys.